Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. Beth Emmanuel is committed to proclaiming the vital gospel message of the coming kingdom of heaven. If you share our passion for this message, please support this teaching ministry and messianic community with your prayers and financial contributions. To learn how, click on the support tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
Last week we ran out of time, so we didn't finish. We worked through the concept of Mark of the Beast and the meaning of that, but we didn't finish the material. So most of this we've already covered. We spoke about the beast out of the sea being, of course, the false Messiah and Rome. Rome is the incarnation of the beast out of the sea. And we spoke about the idea that each of the heads of the beast represent one of the Roman emperors, right? One of the Caesars. And there was one particular head that had suffered a fatal wound, but then miraculously had revived. And we learned that this refers to Nero, because in the first century, there was a popular idea that Nero would return. Either that he was not really dead, or that in some supernatural manner he was going to return. And so the apostolic community as well anticipated the return of Nero. So then we spoke about the beast out of the earth, which is in tandem, works in tandem with the beast out of the sea. Just as the beast out of the sea is represented in Jewish iconography as Leviathan, and the beast out of the land is represented in Jewish iconography as the great ox, Behemoth, right? So you have these two monsters represented here. Likewise, we have a beast out of the sea and a beast out of the earth in Revelation. So who is the beast out of the earth? If you remember, we identified this prophet, this false prophet of the false Messiah. And who is the false prophet of the false Messiah? The imperial Roman priesthood. The Roman priesthood is the authority, the imperial authority, that is insisting upon the worship of the Roman gods and the Roman emperors as well. And so they are the deputies, so to speak, of the Roman pantheon. What did we learn then? We spoke about how the prophet is going to be endowed with signs and wonders and how he has the authority of the first beast and so forth. And then we read the passage about the image of the beast. It reminded us of Nebuchadnezzar's image in Daniel chapter 3. And I told you about the fire of Rome and Nero's Neropolis. He actually was going to change the name of Rome to Neropolis. That's megalomania. Neropolis megalomania. And he created a colossal image of himself to adorn Neropolis, about the size of a water tower, if you will. And this is the basis, the historical basis for the idea of the image of the beast. And I spoke about the concept of theurgy. That is the magical invocation through an idol to produce oracles by channeling the god that the idol represents, therefore making the idol speak. And we see that referenced in the book of Revelation, that concept referenced in the book of Revelation. So I was feeling pretty good about this, all of this, seeing how all of this fits so well, fits so tightly with its first century context. Even though Nero's been dead, nevertheless, Domitian, I taught you, he's understood as sort of the second Nero by the believers. Nero initiated the persecution, Domitian picked it up again, so it's kind of like one and the other, you know, two sides of the same coin. So Domitian kind of is like this second coming of Nero, of the Antichrist to the believers who we are addressing in the book of Revelation. And so everything seems to be going pretty well with our first century context up until we get to this Mark of the Beast, which we didn't really know what to do with. I was able to explain it to you as a unholy parody, if you will, of Tefillin, of the Mark of Tefillin. And we spoke about that a little bit. but I don't have any solid historical example of a brand. Remember, we learned that it's not a mark, but a brand. It's a branding like you would brand a slave with. I don't have a solid historical example of the Roman Empire ever imposing this idea of, if you don't have our branding, if you're not branded, you can't buy or sell. And so he spoke about modern interpretations and barcodes and microchips and so forth. And that's about how far that we had made it in the last class before we ran out of time. Last week we went through a list of different suggestions that had been made. And we also talked about the question then that raises in these different technologies. I spoke about these little radio frequency chips and so forth. The question of, like, is it possible to inadvertently get stuck with the mark of the beast? Like, would it be possible that I didn't see that coming? I was just told that, you know, this is my new credit card. And I didn't realize that when I opened the envelope, it, you know, and I signed here or something like that. And, oh, darn, I'm damned to hell forever because of MasterCard, right? One of the things that we talked about last week is that the mark of the beast, by accepting the mark of the beast, you also accepted worship of the beast. And it's explicit worship of the beast in the context of a Roman tribunal where you're being tested for being a monotheist or not. And so if you're a monotheist, you can't worship the Roman gods. That's the whole issue. That's the whole point of what's going on here. And it's also, by the way, one of the reasons that apocalyptic language is so thick, the symbolism is so thick, because you don't want a Roman governor or official reading this document and reading it for what it says. Rather, everything is spoken of cryptically in code words and ciphers that only the believing community will understand. And that's the apocalyptic genre lends itself very well to that. So when we speak of mystery Babylon, you know, Babylon is the code word that we're going to be using for Rome in the book of Revelation. Anyway, so my point about that is I'd like to relieve us all of the fear of inadvertently acquiring the mark of the beast. We have to, the only way to really get the mark of the beast is to be quite advertent about it and to say, yes, I am going to worship the beast, the false messiah, the antichrist, whatever, and I'm going to say who is like the beast and who can make war with the beast and so forth. And then I will receive this branding, this brand. All right, so now let's get into it in Revelation chapter 13. And I'll start in verse 16 where it says, "And he causes all the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free and the slave, to be given a brand, a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or to sell except the one who has the brand, the name of the beast or the number of his name." All right. So the name of the beast or the number of his name. This is what we're going to try to figure out tonight. The name of the beast, the number of his name. Because it tells us to figure it out. In verse 18, it says, "Here is wisdom." Or, here's a secret. Here's the mystery part. "Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast." Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Know what I mean? Know what I mean? Because remember, we don't want the Roman censors to be reading this. "So let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for that number is that of a man, and his number is 666. Good. First of all, I've already made my case for Nero being the head that was wounded and then revived, and the second coming of Nero and so forth. But here's an interesting piece of first century criticism of Nero, contemporary, I guess, with Nero, from someone named Philostratus. And he said regarding Nero, and this is not a believer or anything like that, no connection to New Testament literature. He says, as to this wild beast, that's Nero, which many call a tyrant, I know not either how many heads he has, nor whether he has crooked talons and jagged teeth. So the commentators just pulled this out of some Roman political statement to say, wow, look at that. Multiple heads, and he's called a beast. Why would Nero be called a beast? Another suggestion for why Nero is called the beast. Remember, the beast, where does the beast really come from? Where's the name the beast really come from? It comes from Daniel chapter 7 and the four beasts that are the four empires, with the fourth terrifying beast being the beast of the Roman Empire. We already learned all that. So that's the fourth beast. So when we say the beast, that's just short for the fourth beast from the book of Daniel, the one that rose out of the sea, okay? But Nero gets a special identification with the beast. Why? Another reason, maybe, that we refer to Nero in our code language as the beast is that during his spectacles and circuses that he would put on, he was known to disguise himself in the skins of a wild beast and go out onto the field. So you'd have these wild beasts being released on people, believers as well, slaves, whoever you've put into the arenas and into the Colosseums and so forth. And you'd release the wild beasts, and everybody would have paid like $10 to come and see these exotic animals gore and savage these helpless people, right? This was before they had Netflix. And so what would happen is Nero would sometimes disguise himself as a beast and go out on the field and do a little goring and savaging himself. So another suggestion of why Nero might be referred to as the beast. But we really don't need any of these suggestions. It's enough to know that he is the Roman emperor that is of concern, and he's like at the head of the seven heads. And that's enough. So what about the number of his name? It says the number of his name. And I would like to point out to you, as Bill was pointing out last week, that the number of the beast is not 666. Although, as I was preparing for the lesson tonight, I did get a mysterious phone call. Yeah, and I was just kind of like preparing and putting, and actually like working on the number of the beast. And I got a mysterious phone call, and it was from a Louisiana area code, but the next three digits were 666. And so I answered, and there was no one on the line. What do you think about that? So maybe it's the phone number of the beast is what we're talking about. You know, we might have... Might have been off the whole time. Yeah, Louisiana. We'd never see it coming from Louisiana. It'd be completely blindsided if the Antichrist came out of Louisiana, don't you think? Yeah, that really happened. And, just a couple hours ago. To understand 666, you understand that we weren't working with, numerical digits in those days, so you couldn't write 666. Nobody was writing, so it's not vav, 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 or its equivalent in Greek. It's the way you would say it in Hebrew. 666, like that, only you might go backwards. 666, if you were to express it in Hebrew. But, That's how it comes together. 666. So with that textual variant, remember I told you that in one version, one manuscript of Revelation, the number is actually 616. That would be 610 and 6, right? 616. That's the neighbor of the beast. First of all, it says, you should figure this out. Someone with understanding should be able to figure this out. And it should be pretty easy to figure out, actually. It shouldn't be really hard. It should be pretty easy to figure out, and it should have been pretty easy to figure out in the first century. Otherwise, it's meaningless for the readers to whom it was addressed. So if the number of the beast adds up to Prince Charles of Wales, as some have suggested, that would have been lost on the original readers. That would have been lost on your first century reader. That wouldn't make sense. It's got to be somebody that they would know. It also says, for the number is that of a man. Now, when it says the number is that of a man, we're talking about a specific person. When it says that of a man, it means this represents, this symbolizes a specific person. However, it's often been pointed out that 6 is also associated, the number 6 is also has an association with human beings in general. Why? Yes, because what day was Adam created on? The 6th day. Okay? And in Hebrew, every letter of the alphabet, and this is also true in Greek, has a numerical designation. And this is how we would have represented numbers in the apostolic era. So, Aleph is 1, Bet is 2, Gimel is 3, Dalet is 4, right? You following me? So, Vav, the letter Vav, symbolizes the number 6. Vav is also a hieroglyph for a standing man. Kind of interesting connection. So Vav, which represents hieroglyphically speaking, represents a standing human being, also is the number 6. All right. But maybe that might be a false lead, a rabbit trail, irrelevant to actually deciphering this. What we're really wanting to do, what we're really needing to accomplish is to work with those numbers, though. To work with the numerical equivalents in order to arrive at our name. The rabbis play this game all the time, especially in the Talmud, especially in the Midrash. It's called gematria. Gematria is the art of adding up the numerical value of the letters in a particular word. So if I add up the numerical value of the letters in a particular word and then compare that with the same sum that I've added up in another word, there must be some relationship between these two words. That's the game of gematria. This is where the idea of, there's all sorts of like ideas of embedded codes and that sort of thing in the Torah. It would be easy to dismiss it all, to dismiss the entire art of gematria as just so much foolishness. If it wasn't that the New Testament also occasionally dabbles in gematria and plays with gematria. And this is one of the instances, by the way, where that happens. So what we need to do as we're unlocking our riddle is we need to find the numerical equivalents. So I have a few suggestions. Many suggestions have been made. These are not my suggestions. This is not my original work, by the way. This is just kind of standard interpretation. First of all, a very interesting thing. This is a very interesting thing. The word beast, the Greek word beast, therion, has the numerical equivalent of 666 if you transliterate the Greek letters first to Hebrew letters. So, you'd have to start with the Greek word, therion, and then say, how would you spell that in Hebrew? You'd say, in Hebrew, it would be Tav, which has a numerical value of 400. Resh, which has a numerical value of 200. Yod, which has a numerical value of 10. Vav, which has a numerical value of 6. And Nun, which has a numerical value of 50. You add them all up. You add up the Hebrew transliteration for the Greek word for beast, and you get 666. That's pretty amazing, don't you think? All right, so just to prove to you that this is a legitimate way of ciphering in the first century to talk about Roman emperors, I have this passage from Sibylline Oracles here for you. And in this passage from the Sibylline Oracles, which is a first century apocalyptic, you know, prophetic text, we're talking about Roman emperors and assigning cryptic numbers to them with Greek letters and their numerical equivalents. So listen to this. Then shall one rule who has the initial sign of the number 3, but it's the Greek letter gamma. The number 3, gamma, which emperor has a gamma? His name starts with a gamma. Gaius Caligulus. And then, after him, shall be a lord who shall, for his first initial, have twice 10, a kappa. So who's the emperor with a kappa? That's Claudius. And so on and so forth. It works through all of the emperors in the first century this way, until up to, and one whose mark is 50, and what's 50? And what's the Greek numerical equivalent of 50? The Greek letter nu. Whose name starts with that? Nero, right. And he shall be Lord, a dreadful serpent, breathing grievous war, acting the athlete, driving chariots, putting to death. And it goes on with a further description of Nero. But so you see here, this is amazing, is this is not even a text written with any influence from the New Testament, but rather it's completely independent of the New Testament, and you can see we're playing the same game of assigning these numerical equivalents to hint at the name of the emperor that we're talking about. Who's the Therion? Who's the beast? The number of the beast, 666. Of course, I'm making the argument it's Nero. And here's how we do that. Again, it only works in Hebrew, not in Greek. Isn't that interesting? The whole book of Revelation is in Greek, but the code only works in Hebrew. So, Kof for 100, Samek for 60, and I'll take a Resh for 200. That's Caesar, or Caesar. Then I'm going to take a Nun for 50, a Resh for 200, a Vav for 6, and then that final Nun for 50. I add it all up. I get 666. For a long time, people objected to this formulation because that's not really how you spell Caesar in Hebrew. There should be a yod in there to make it to make it proper, Kaiser Caesar. And so really, we should have 676. The number of the beast should be 676. However, it was later discovered in inscriptional evidence, I believe it was inscriptional evidence, that the Aramaic rendering of Kaiser Caesar is according to this spelling. So, there you go. Yes, Hebrew letters, but Aramaic, which is the common tongue of the Jewish people in the first century. The words are not Hebrew words. Right, these are Latin words. That have been, so they're not even Greek. They're, because it's Rome, you know, as we're talking about the Romans. So these are Latin names that have been transliterated into Hebrew letters. Speaking of Latin, if you were to transliterate the Latin name for Nero, again, Kaiser Neron, we put that noon on the end for Neron, But in Latin, it's just Nero, as we're familiar with it. So if you're to transliterate it, Kaiser Nero, into these Hebrew letters, and add them up, as it would appear in Latin, you come up with the number 616. A coincidence that we have a textual variant on this in one version of the book of Revelation, it gives us 616? I think not. Instead, that particular version is probably the scribe was aware that his community, anyway, would be looking at the Latin and not looking at the Greek spelling of Nero's name in order to derive, in order to decode the riddle. All right, so this is how I understand it. This is how I understand the name of the number of the beast. So when we say, we read that last verse, here is wisdom. The name of the beast or the number of his name, here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for that, for the number is that of a man. The man is Nero. And his number is 666. In other words, Caesar, Nero. That's how I understand it. So, to accept the mark of the beast, then, at least as it was understood in the first century, would be to accept the branding of Caesar Nero, to become a slave, a subject of Caesar Nero, and to worship him as divine, the divine Roman emperor Caesar Nero. The very interesting thing about that is that at the time of the writing of the book of Revelation, Caesar Nero has already been dead for 25 years. So how do we understand that we're still worried about Nero 25 years later? We're still anticipating that the beast is going to come back and it's going to be Nero. Well, there is this rumor going around in the first century, and this is why we see this head that was slain and its incurable wound was cured. And we'll see more of that as we get further on. I think in Revelation chapter 17, we'll see more of this imagery of the resurrection of one of the heads. Here's an early church writer complaining about this idea. Hence, some crazed men believe that Nero has been born away and kept alive. For Sibyl declares that the matricide through an exile will come back from the ends of the earth. That's the Sibylline oracles that I've been talking about. Let me put this into our language. Some end times nutters believe that Nero was raptured up and he's being kept alive in order to come back at the end times. So that since he was the first persecutor, the first Roman emperor to declare a persecution against the believers, he may also be the last persecutor and the herald of the arrival of Antichrist. It is not right to believe this, says Lactantius. Yet just as certain as our number maintains that two prophets have been born away until the last days, before the holy and eternal rule of Christ. So who are these two prophets who have been born away? Enoch and Elijah. We learned about them. These are the two witnesses. In the same way, they think that Nero too will come as the forerunner and herald of the devil when he comes to lay waste the earth and overturn the human race. He's complaining about the idea. He doesn't like the idea. But the way that Revelation, these prophecies are being interpreted in the among the early believers, is that Nero is going to make a second grand entrance at the end times in order for the final showdown. And so it was very natural for the believers in the days of John and the Domitian persecution to see the Emperor Domitian as the incarnation of this second coming of Nero and his persecution against the believers that we've been studying since we started the book of Revelation to be this build-up to the end times. As we know, didn't turn out that way. Turned out that there's been many tyrants since then, many persecutors, many of them far worse than Domitian in their savagery against us and against the Jewish people, have risen since those days. But nevertheless, this is how apocalypse works. Apocalypse is always lifting the veil to show us the spiritual powers that are at work behind the scenes in order to give us a way to interpret and understand the things that are happening in the world even today. And so this apocalypse was meant for interpretation of what was happening in the days of the believers in the first century. Nevertheless, the lifting of the veil still reveals to us the same spiritual powers that are at work. And these prophecies also will find a fulfillment.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.